I thought so.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 420 for the week of August 15th, 2022. I am Too Bland, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Suicide Squeeze, Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm all choked up over here.
Foul Baller, Tara Ariano.
Oh, no.
And Slap Bunt, Liz Rocher.
I've never even been to a farm.
Yeah, that's right. I looked up a baseball term for my intro.
Too Bland.
I'm impressed.
That's several Buncy points right there.
Thank you. Wow. Now, well, Sarah, can you tell me what Too Bland stands for?
No. I mean, bit like basically I know what it is, but yeah.
Thrown out on the base pass like a nincompoop.
Yes, I forgot the nincompoop aspect.
Too Bland. Now I like baseball.
Well, on that note, welcome to Extra Hot Grade for another week. It is now a sports podcast. Just kidding. However, our guest is a writer and editor at Yahoo Sports. Please welcome Liz Rocher.
Liz.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here.
We're thrilled to have you. Liz is here as a friend of the podcast, but also in her expert capacity because we are talking about A League of Their Own, the TV series. Here's what you need to know. It's World War II. The men are overseas, but we still need baseball. So let the broads play, I guess.
That would have been way better if you could have done that in the announcer voice.
Sorry.
Of the Film Weekly News.
Yeah, sorry.
War. Now the dames have to play baseball. How are we going to make the sprockets if they're playing baseball? Baseball.
You probably know the 1992 film, A League of Their Own. If not, it's fine because Prime Video's TV series take is set in the same world, but it features all new characters. Now we are following Carson Shaw, Abby Jacobson, who also co-created the show with Will Graham, who leaves Idaho in 1943 to try out for the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. Not trying out because the league is segregated and she is black is Max Chapman, Shantae Adams, and it especially sucks for her to be excluded because A, she is an amazing pitcher, and B, she actually lives in Rockford, where one of the girls' league teams is based. A lot of the Rockford peaches that we get to know sort of map onto characters from the movie, but there is one major difference between the movie and the show, which is on the show, a bunch of these athletes are queer. All 8 episodes of the first season dropped last Friday. We may talk about events from any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Liz, should our listeners watch the show?
Yes, I definitely say yes.
Sarah?
Yes, but.
Dave?
I only got to watch one episode because I've had a weekend, but I thought it was good, so I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say no. I watched the whole thing and I didn't love it. So let's get into it. Not all baseball movies are beloved by all baseball fans, I have learned from being platonically married to one. So I will pose this to the panelists who do care about the sport first. What is your opinion of the movie and were you expecting the show to hew more closely to it, Liz?
I love the movie. My mom took me and my sisters to see it in the theater when I was, I think, 9 or 10. I've watched it more times than I can count. I could recite it for you right now, but I won't. I really liked it. There were enough, at least the way it maps on to the movie. There's a lot of little bits that you can see that they throw in places that you wouldn't expect, like the special song that they sing, which happens at the end of the first season. The characters have a lot of similar names, and some of them have similar characteristics. Surely, being incredibly in her head. I enjoyed all of those aspects, and I thought they were well done without, you know, piling them on and doing a lot of winky fan service. Like, hey, look at us. We like the movie, too.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, same question.
I thought it was close enough. My whole thing with baseball on TV and my sort of grand unifying theory of why it tends not to work is that it's one thing to have the actors playing baseball in a 2-hour feature, but week after week after week, it, like, baseball is very hard and so is acting, and finding people who can credibly do either is not easy, which is how you end up with John Turturro's Billy Martin. So in this, first of all, I will say the baseball was not an active problem. Like, I didn't feel like it was being CGI'd or edited around, or like Chrissy Snow, like, you just missed that hit while the camera's like facing the stand. Or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was not an issue, but I like the anachronistic writing just kept pulling me out of the parts of the story that, like, I thought the proportions in which it was trying to be its own story were correct. And I thought the ways in which it was trying to be its own story mostly were correct. I think going just entirely with Max for a season would have been my preference, honestly. But it, you know, we got what we got. Darcy Carton's performance is amazing. But like, just the expressions that they keep using, it's like, it didn't feel quite intentional enough to work for me. It's not like Sofia Coppola putting Marie Antoinette in Converse. Like, right. There was just not this intentionality. And it was like they were trying to put 2022 sort of values into this 1940s world. And I get that you want to correct those things about the movie couldn't do.
Yeah.
But take 10 minutes and figure out that people don't say actually this much in 1943. Like, I just, that was very distracting to me. I thought I would get used to it, and I just haven't.
No, I agree. I noted the same thing every time when I was watching all 8 episodes, like I said, and taking notes. I wrote down the most egregious anachronisms in that respect, because they really took me out too. Like, no one was referring to their support system or saying, you are a whole wife in 1943.
Yeah.
Like, those are, I mean, in the case of support system, at least you could say that one's 40 years old, but whole wife is like 2020s slang.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is, there's
so
just,
about that.
Yeah.
This is fine. Like,
yes. Are we going to drive the car or whatever? Like, no, I'm not saying you need to like overload it with like 23 skidoos or whatever, but like,
I was just going to suggest a skidoo,
for example, but this,
which
is,
I think is also the wrong decade, but we're not that
sure,
old.
But you take my point. Like, in the
I
original,
do.
Because as soon as I finished the series, I watched the movie again for, like, Liz, mm-hmm. I've seen it more times than I can say. And,
same.
And there, I mean, I'm sure there were things in that, like expressions in that I didn't clock, but that's the point. Like, if you just lied all of it, if you don't try to put in too much slang, you're not going to notice that stuff. And here it was so glaring, and it just felt sloppy.
Yeah, lazy.
And I agree, Sarah, that the actor who sells it the most is Darcy Carton, who plays Greta. And it's partly because she has such a period look. Mm-hmm. In her face. Like, there's the sort of Twitter joke where it's like, this person, they said it about Dakota Johnson with regard to the Persuasion, where it's like, this is a face that knows what an iPhone is or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Some of the actors have that. I would say she doesn't. Who are your standouts in the cast list?
I really loved Beverly, the chaperone.
Dale Dickey.
Mm-hmm. Just, mm-hmm. Yes. But she just sort of kicked ass the entire time. You know, they let her have some nice moments. I thought she was, like, one of the better sort of translations, because the chaperone from the movie was a huge drip and no fun, not interesting. Mm-hmm. But they cast like a woman with an interesting face who had like perfect mannerisms, who talked about being in the Marines in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
I thought all of that was great. She was, I think, my favorite translated character.
And what did we think of the manager?
I have a lot of thoughts.
I had a lot of questions about that. Well, let's get into it. Sarah, what did you think of the manager, since you brought him up?
As someone who has been on a soapbox about how Tom Hanks should have won an Oscar for A League of Their Own,
yes.
And just for the heart is what makes it great speech, which, even thinking about it, I get a little chill and also mad, because that's a great performance. And like, anytime someone says something random and kind of rated R, I tag on, that's good advice, because of the, you know, don't get the clap, Jimmy Dugan line. I may have seen this movie too many times, AMA. Mm-hmm.
No such thing.
But that, I mean, the casting I thought was interesting, but then I thought a more sort of Jimmy Dugan approach would have been better for this character. But at the same time, I also felt like in the mind of the production team, like a lot of the men are just supposed to be these two-dimensional cardboard figures of fun. And like, that's mm-hmm. that's a fine attitude to have generally in life.
Sure.
And especially with it, like it is a league of their own. Mm-hmm. But I felt like that was another missed opportunity because, I mean, Jimmy Dugan was based on a real guy who had a very crazy story. I can link that in the show notes. But yeah, that was one of those things that just felt a little off and not thought through all the way in terms of how it was going to sort of hang together with the rest of the production.
Yeah. Well, we should just add before Liz answers this, he's played by Nick Offerman here, and he's in for a few episodes and then he sort of just is gone. And there's a weird sort of plot thread about like, well, who is managing the team now? And I just felt like there were a few instances in the production where it seemed like people were started and then they were unavailable. And there had to be write arounds of like why this person is gone, because they had started filming in like early pandemic and they had to stop. Like there's the right. same thing where there's two different chocolate bar guys where that mm-hmm. basically seem
oh,
like
yeah.
they're playing the same character functionally, but they're not. It's Nat Faxon and then some nobody that I've never heard of. So I wondered about that. But anyway, Liz, you said you had thoughts.
Not Faxon.
Yes, on Nick Offerman's character. Go ahead.
I hated that. I enjoyed the series on the whole for the most part, but that was the part that I hated the most. They had him come in. His attitude wasn't clear. It wasn't clear if he was being like fake nice or if he really hated them. We only found out about that through an overheard conversation. And then he's like gone. He takes a job like with the Orioles, and then he's just gone. He's never mentioned again. And that's probably a pandemic thing, but it was awful. I thought it was a really bad way to have that. Like if it was intentional, that makes it worse, a lot worse, because
right.
it seems like it was an excuse just to let the girls be themselves, be by themselves, and have, you know, Carson manage and have this this sort of growth throughout the series, becoming someone who doesn't let people walk all over her, which I don't think they really accomplished all that well. But I
agree.
He wasn't written well to begin with. I really didn't like the lack of clarity on his character, because if there is one man in this entire series who should have been more than a two-dimensional character, it should have been the manager, who in the movie was a very yeah. important part of their development. And I hated that they made him that way. I mean, Nick Offerman could have been great casting. We'll never know, because he was there for maybe five scenes.
Yeah.
I think if you have two chocolate bar people, the first one has to die in a chocolate factory accident. I think that's just the way you have to write mm-hmm. it. And just yeah. have it be like this sort of deadpan aside. So yeah, mm-hmm. he fell into the chocolate vat.
Yeah, totally.
Every episode. It's like the Spinal Tap drummer. Yeah. Yep. I'm yes. comfortable with that.
Put us in charge of season two.
The movie sort of has a veneer of historicity. Obviously, it leaves a lot of gaps that the show has filled in, as it were. And it seems like it aspires to make Max and Carson kind of co-leads, but I felt like it didn't really. I mean, we already said, like, maybe this should have been about just one of them. And I don't know if the one it should have been about would be Carson. Like, I feel like Abby Jacobson is just, like, she does not have enough range. And anytime she's in a scene with anyone, they're just blowing her off the screen. I don't know. Sarah, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, she... like, she delivers this anachronistic dialogue really well, which is a problem. Mm. And I wasn't buying it. And there were so many things I wasn't buying about her. Like, I wasn't buying her lack of confidence for some reason. I wasn't buying that she was married. I wasn't buying that she'd even read a book about the 40s. Like, there were just a lot of things that I didn't believe. And as annoying as Kit is in the movie, like, you believe Lori Petty's shit. Like, that is mm-hmm. some legit, someone who was a younger sister and wrote this character. And Abby Jacobson is just not quite, It's not exactly miscasting. There's also the problem that, unfortunately, there are far more charismatic and interesting stories happening all around her, that sometimes it's like this, that your lead is just a little bit sort of like drippy or just not the most interesting or charismatic character or actor on screen. And that's unfortunately the case here. She's not bad. And I get that you don't want to have like the spices be the center of the dish, but maybe you do.
Yeah. Liz, what did you think of Abby Jacobson as our lead? Did you agree with Sarah?
I agree completely. She just, like, halfway through the third episode, I was like, why are we paying attention to her? I would really love to see more of Max.
Yeah.
And her friend and her family, who they were, that whole storyline was so interesting to me. But Abby Jacobson, I mean, also her name was Carson. How is that a 40s name?
Well, Carson McCullers.
Oh, I guess that's right.
I mean, maybe if she were Southern, but the character isn't. That was another thing I didn't buy. This person is from Idaho.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
Nope, not from Idaho. I just had a tough time with her because she's always talking down. She's talking quiet. Her facial expressions a lot of the time were just really down in the dumps and didn't reflect a lot of her feelings. Like, I have no problem with her as an actress of current day projects. But maybe not of projects any time earlier than, let's say, 1980.
Sure. Yeah. It also seemed like, you know, everyone keeps calling her farm girl. She's like, I don't live on a farm. And then it's like, we don't learn anything more about what her life is like. Like, there's one mention of a sister that she talks to for a second and then that gets dropped. It's just like, it's just another thing that feels sloppy to me, where it's like stuff is brought up and then just put back down. And I understand it's hard when you have, you know, 10 characters on this team alone that you need to service, never mind like Max and everyone in her plot line. But it's just like this, I felt like this, it was trying to do too much, maybe, let's say. Like, there's interesting, there's some truthful moments. I thought that when we get to the episode with Nancy Lenihan as Vivian, the cosmetics magnate, saying, like, all the lady classes are bullshit, but, like, this is part of the game you have to play. Like, okay, like, that's interesting to me, but it's, like, that's not the stuff they're pursuing, because there's so much of, like, and everyone's gay, which, like, I'm sure that's true. Like, I'm sure that is definitely true broadly across, like, athletics, that there are lots of people who go into it because for that reason, and or that's just part of their story, and it never gets covered, especially not in the 40s. But it's just like it just felt like it had too broad of a scope for the space they had to explore everything, and for the amount of effort that they put into some parts versus others. I don't know. Again, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, the parts. There were also some moments at which it was like, queer, And it's like, like, we are watching it in 2022. If you're, like, we're not titillated by this.
Right.
As it were. Like, it's great that we're broadening, as it were, this part of the story, but maybe be a little less proud of it and a little, you know, less proud of people saying 2022 things to each other.
Yeah.
From a steam train. Like, right. I don't know.
See, the anachronistic music really bothered me. Like, I've been singing Peace of My Heart since that played in the show. But my first thought was, hey, why is that there? They had anachronistic music all over the place. And just like all of the phrasings and stuff like that, it bothered me a lot to the point where my husband said, hey, please stop talking about it. I'm trying to watch the show that you told me to watch.
And you said, you're learning nothing from this show. Get out.
Yes.
Also, justice for having the character who's supposed to be from Saskatchewan pronounce it Saskatchewan and not Saskatchewan, like she's an American like me. Come on. Moose jaw.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad calling out the things that I didn't like about it because I know it got like review bombed to Jesus over the weekend. I mean, literally from psychos that were like, why did you have to get your woke bullshit in this property? I like, which, like, that's not what I'm saying. Like, and fuck off to everyone who did that, because representation is important and I appreciate that efforts were made. I just feel like it needed to tighten up.
Yeah. As it were. And this might be mostly pandemic related.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like I can't imagine that the poochying of the manager was the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was, it should have been more intentional. But there are some things that like fell into the net. Mm-hmm. Like they just missed the trapeze on it. So
yeah.
I mean,
things
I
that fell
still
into the chocolate.
Yeah. They fell into the chocolate. Excuse me. Sorry, Dave.
Mm-hmm. And Nick Offerman had another canoe to finish. I'm on a deadline. I can't do it.
Exactly.
It is time to go around the dial talking about things we've been watching on TV recently, not necessarily recent TV. Tara, take it away.
Hello. Hi. This is recent TV. The third season of Never Have I Ever just dropped last weekend on Netflix. There will be one more season, which they have been filming this summer, and then that's it, which seems right since Paxton Hall Yoshida looked old as shit in the first season, and now he's 3 years even older than that. But anyway, he was the swim team dreamboat that our protagonist, Davey, finally actually got together with in the season two finale. But this is a soapy teen sitcom and things can't stay good for long. But if you were sick of seeing Davey ping-ponging between Paxton and Ben, her intermittently sweet frenemy, good news, they gave her a new love interest this season. And he is played by Anirudh Pishirodi, the extremely hot probie on 911. And yes, if he's playing a full-time firefighter there and a high school student here, he also looks way too old for the role, but I don't care that much. Did I mention he is hot? We also see changes in the lives of Davey's closest female relatives. Her perfect cousin, Kamala, has to resolve the situation with her arranged marriage. And Davey's mother, Nalini, practices letting go of her own expectations with Kamala, which makes it easier for her to do with Davey later in the season. And even though boys are always moving in and out of Davey's life because she is a horny teenager, and sidebar, speaking of boys, Reese Witherspoon and Ryan Phillippe's son got nepotismed into the show in a tertiary role, and he is very bad at acting. That's beside the point. This is a mother-daughter love story between Nalini and Davey, and it is exciting to see them grow together after how fraught things were when we first met them in the first season. And I interviewed Poorna Jagannathan, who plays Nalini. So I rewatched the first two seasons before starting the third. It really is a funny, sweet, occasionally emotionally destructive show in the best way. Things that made me cry the first time still made me cry again. So if you just need a nice catharsis, I would say take another trip through it. We will link that Poorna interview in the show notes. And I also interviewed Seth Meyers about his Emmy nominations this year for Late Night and for various online content that he did. So you can find that in the show notes as well.
Liz, what have you been watching recently?
I am a RuPaul's Drag Race fan through and through. And I've been watching a lot of the Drag Race franchises that are without her, the titular RuPaul, which I now feel are, I think, some of the best Drag Race you're going to get, period.
Hmm.
I subscribe to Wild Presents Plus, and so I've been watching Drag Race France, Drag Race España, and Canada's Drag Race, which all have a lot to offer. A lot of it is me thinking about, hey, why are these people doing it in this way? And like going down a Wikipedia hole and learning about why French people think something is funny. very few Jerry Lewis references in Drag Race France, to my disappointment, but it's fascinating. Like the level of fashion is really, really high, especially on Drag Race France. On Drag Race España, which I ended a few months ago, but I just rewatched for the hell of it, Pedro Almodovar is involved.
Wow.
Yes. They do a runway tribute to him. And then he has like a video later on where he talks about them, which is excellent.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
They had a tribute to a a gay and trans icon, and they all did a runway tribute to her. It's so much more progressive right off the bat than regular Drag Race ever was, and in a way, you know, remains. So I just want to encourage anyone, if you're interested, fork over, I think, $5 a month to take a look at that. The fashion is sort of is out of this world. You'll spend a lot of time looking up who people are on Snatch Game. I have no idea who the guests are, which is a fun educational experience that I didn't expect to have when I watched that. It kind of shows that RuPaul, in a lot of ways, is what's dragging the main series down. She seems very resistant to change, and her level of interest in whoever's in front of her has slowly declined over the years. The next season of Drag Race we're going to get is 15, and they just finished All Stars 7, and I'm assuming they're going to start filming 8 in like maybe 4 months. So there's no way she's ever leaving of her own accord. She will never retire. She will die in drag at the Drag Race table doing a judgment. But I hope that she takes kind of a look at those and sees what they can do, because she really holds back a lot of things. She's currently doing Drag Race Down Under, which is the series that is by far the worst that Drag Race has ever produced. And part of it is RuPaul putting her expectations of American drag and North American drag on Australia, where things are, more than any other country, very much not the same. Mm-hmm. The level is completely different. The expectations are different. And you can just see it in the queens' faces every week. They're like, I have disappointed her again. And yet this is all I've brought. Mm-hmm. I've brought nothing but outfits that I myself made.
Right.
So I encourage everyone to check that out. If you're even just a tiny bit sick of seeing RuPaul ask people to do the same things over and over, because they have former contestants hosting two of the three formats that I mentioned. They have Brooklyn Heights does Canada, and Nikki Doll does France. So I encourage everyone to take a look at those. You will enjoy the fashion, if nothing else.
I think we're overdue for like a big expose of Drag Race, because if you listen to various podcasts, people will talk about like when you arrive at the workroom on episode one, like you are already in the hole financially. You have to come with outfits for every single episode, and you might only be there for, you know, a week, and then you're fucked. Like you probably, you can probably get better bookings because you were on Drag Race at all, but still, like you can be tens of thousands of dollars in the hole just for, you know, not leaving out your gigs that you're not doing, plus spending on your costumes.
Yeah, it feels to me like Willem was about to take advantage of their sort of moment on the outs to spill some tea. Mm-hmm. And then, like in Monsters, Inc., when someone brings like a little baby sock back through the door, like a dome was dropped over Willem, and that was maybe the last we heard of it. And then every now and then there's a flicker on like the Katya web show. Mm-hmm. But like I watch all the Drag Race sort of ancillary stuff, like the backstage chats and the shows that they do separately. Mm-hmm. And I don't watch regular Drag Race because I'm exhausted and Michelle Visage is making me tired. So I might check out.
I'm ready for her to go.
Yeah. Drag Race en France, because enough already.
Tell us where people can find more of you, Liz.
You can find me 5 days a week at Yahoo Sports, which is sports.yahoo.com. I write on everything, baseball, football, basketball. I wrote about the Little League World Series today. Huh. I write about tennis. I'm the only one on staff who cares even a little bit about tennis. So I do all of our tennis coverage. Super happy that the U.S. Open is always in the Eastern time zone, because trying to wake up for Australia and France is less than fun. And you can also hear me twice a week on the Good Fight, P-H-I-G-H-T, the Good Fight family of podcasts. It's a Phillies podcast. I do two of them, and you can find them just by searching that. If you like the Phillies, or you like to hear people lose their minds about bad baseball, which is most of our archives, please check it out.
Awesome.
You can also find me on Twitter at Liz Rocher. That's R-O-S-C-H-E-R.
Sincerity of a Dick.
Better Call Saul, series finale. Like a lot of the last season, if we're being totally honest, it was a little bit self-indulgent, a little bit fan service-y, but as I felt with the end of Breaking Bad, the Parent series, I respected Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould's decision to give viewers as much as they could of what we wanted and what they felt they needed without selling out characters. Sometimes a story tells you how it wants to go, and there's been kind of a lot of press about them admitting, like, in the beginning, like, we didn't know Kim was going to be a thing. We didn't know what how it was going to end up, so on and so forth. This creative team has always been, in my opinion, very skilled at staying on that line between serving the story and serving the crazy fandom. The finale itself felt a little too long to me, like there were too many commercials, like the time machine runner was not very deft, like God bless Bryan Cranston, but that shit went on far too long and told us almost nothing we didn't already know. That sort of is true of the last 3 to 4 episodes overall. Probably, you know, that meeting could have maybe been an email, but we like these people and we wanted to spend more time with them and know what happens to them. And there were some beautiful cinematographic moments. And I, like Nat, don't really have any kick with any of the decisions that were made. These people know how to make television. None of it felt like wasted time. And I'm not going to get super specific, but there was a particular smoking scene in a Supermax visiting room that I think I might be pregnant just from the sizzling tension. Like it was, I mean, you can't see me in this famously visual medium of podcasting, but I am fanning myself. Just an audible hum of chemistry between those two. And I will miss spending time with them and their relationship. And also, you know, R.I.P. Lalo. I still miss that guy. And I hope Tony Dalton is in everything. Anyone else watch it and have thoughts?
Yeah, I like how they ended everybody's story.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if we needed a half season denouement of the present, you know, the present black and white day. I felt that whole thing felt stretched out from the high energy sort of conclusion of our color storyline.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with Carol Burnett and her son and everything like that, it just felt like they were starting something so late in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, again, where they ended up, where the characters were, sort of the 11th hour redemption declaration of who I am at the end and how that pertains to his relationship with Kim. No quibbles with that whatsoever. I was kind of at the second half of the last season. Like, why did this start so early on? I was just like surprised, and they never really sold me on why we spent so much time, you know, in the Cinnabon universe at the end.
Yeah.
But with that said, like some of it really did feel like a little bit of fart sniffing. Like we're going to, you know, storyboard and do yet another caper, like yet another heist. And it's like, do we need this? No. Is this a pleasure to watch these people who really know how to fucking do this? Yeah, it is. I don't mind. It's fine. Yeah. But there's
there's a bit of cynicism about it too, because the way they split it was like the 6A is eligible for this year's Emmys, and now 6B I think will be eligible for next year's Emmys.
I believe, like, that's correct.
Every time they do that, it's like, we know why you're doing it, but like a 13 episode season is a season. You don't need to split it across 2 Emmy years.
That case, I think maybe Odenkirk, you know, almost dying might have played a role.
Sure.
So, but yeah,
sure.
You're like, whatever.
It's not that. It's that that happened so long ago. Like, I don't think that was the reason that they split it up. I think it's greediness.
Yeah, I mean, and pandemic scheduling, who knows?
Right. But we also saw in like all of the millions of commercial breaks, like, you know, it's the AMC desperation that happens every time one of their big hits ends, where like, no, don't go anywhere. We've got other shows coming with Bob Odenkirk and Giancarlo Esposito. We don't have pictures of them yet, but we swear to God they're coming in 2023. Come on back. Forget about AMC Plus.
It's like, and now knit The Walking Dead. Like, guys, please stop.
Yes.
Stop.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of bad ideas that actually turned out awesome, Again with this. Yeah. It's the companion Patreon podcast to our Melrose Yay. Place podcast. Again with this. And coming up very shortly, you'll be listening to me having watched Starship Troopers for the first time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how this got around me. Mm-hmm. And I have regrets, frankly. Yeah.
A movie
so disastrously good.
It is fantastic. And as we were going through it, I kept saying to Dave, she was on Melrose Place.
Yeah.
He was on Melrose Place.
Yeah.
He was on both shows playing four different characters. Like, there are a total of 12 actors from the Starverse in this movie. 13 if you count Neil Patrick Harris, because through Uncoupled.
Right. So, and then I'm absolutely sure Chris Marchette was stabbed by a bug in the deep background of some shot. I'm not convinced I wasn't in that movie.
Yeah.
And getting my brain sucked by a bug. Anyway, it's glorious. We're talking about it on our Patreon. You can find out more about that at patreon.com/againwiththis. Get into it. We have a good
time. Afraid. It's afraid.
Oh, what a movie.
I am here to back up Malcolm from a couple weeks ago, who was praising This Fool. Me and Tara devoured this show over one evening. It is a Hulu comedy. It is about Julio and Luis and their sort of connection through the Hugs Not Thugs organization. They are also related. Malcolm gave a pretty good overview of it, but I just want to say that sold me on it, certainly when he brought up comparisons to Southside, another one of our favorites. And I think that comparison was very apt. Although this one has more of a story throughput than Southside does, a little less sketchy, a little more character. And Christopher from The Sopranos is in it, Sarah. So a little something there for Bunsy. And he is really good in it.
He's really funny. The first episode we watched, I was like, well, that was kind of pilot-y, but I would keep watching it. And then the second episode like gets to such another level so quickly, to where when we get to the final shot, I was screaming with laughter. We're like, I won't say anything, but up in the clouds. It was very good. And it continues to go places that I was not expecting. I would say the lead guy, Chris Estrada, who also co-created it, is not the best actor, which is also true of many people on Southside. You just have to sort of make your peace with it, that that's part of its charm. But the guy who plays his cousin, Luis, Frankie Quinones, is really, really, really funny and good.
Yeah.
So he makes up for that shortfall.
So, yes, double recommended now. So check out This Fool on Hulu. And also check out the next Extra Extra Hot Great is the News Radio Power Rankings. Where's the cast now? Where do we rank them? How successful they've been? What metrics are we using? Find out everything this Friday on Extra Extra Hot Great. That's available to all supporters. Thank you for your support. And you can join up at patreon.com/extrahotgreat for that and almost 200 other episodes. And then right here on the next EHG Prime, we welcome back Jeff Drake to talk about House of Dragons. And all three O's have those little slashes in them, so you know it's a Game of Thrones show.
It's House of the Dragon. There's just the one.
Oh, well, I don't want to watch now.
I quit then.
All right, I thought there was more than one.
No.
Oh.
That's bullshit.
House of the Dragon. His name is Steve.
All right. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our guest, Liz. Liz, take it away.
My husband and I are huge Taskmaster fans. And when we recently got my dad and sister into it, I used season 7 to reel them in. For my money, it's the funniest and most chaotic season, with a zany and demented cast. And episode 4 has everything you want in an episode of Taskmaster. Creativity from both the task designers and the contestants. Lots of interaction between the contestants themselves and host Greg Davies, who is at his bitchy best. Audience frustration at the awarding of points, or maybe that's just me, and nonstop laughing. Our cast members are James A. Caster, Jessica Knappert, Carrie Godleyman, Phil Wang, and Rod Gilbert, who has been friends with Greg for over 15 years. And of course, there's Greg's assistant and series creator, little Alex Horn. Dave, clip one, please.
And here, standing just shy of 5 feet tall, it's my sufficient assistant. Ooh, it's a little Alex Horn!
There are 5 tasks in this episode. And each one involves some combination of perfect taskmaster elements. Task one is the prize task. The comedians had to bring in their most confusing thing. James brings in a DVD of The Matrix. Clip two.
Everyone who you spoke to about The Matrix has gone, I can't wrap my head around it, man. Try and watch The Matrix, man.
Who are these people?
My parents.
Rod Gilbert, who sees the prize task as an opportunity to embarrass his longtime friend, brought in a T-shirt with an upside-down picture of a nearly naked Greg lounging awkwardly on the floor, a picture which he will end up involving in almost all of the prize tasks. Phil brings in a little wooden box and discusses for the second time this season how he haggled for it. Clip three.
It's a mysterious box I bought in Thailand from a mysterious man. And I haggled. I haggled for this box.
Okay. How did the haggling process go?
Well, he said 300 baht.
Yep.
And I said 150. And then he said 300. And I said 200. And then he said 300. So I paid 300 baht.
Greg attempts to open the box and is almost immediately interrupted by James. Greg, who is a former teacher, takes James into a corner to discuss his unexpected outburst. Clip four, please.
You want to give it a go?
It's a confusing little box.
It's going to be good old telly, isn't it?
I'll just open the box, you pussy. I just got impatient.
How was that all about?
I'm sorry. I got over. I thought that was
it's all right.
In my head. I thought it was in my head.
It's all right. I've just taken charge of the box. If I'd been there for 20 minutes or so, I would have understood you getting irritated, but I still wouldn't have expected you to use that sort of language. That's, you apologise and we'll leave it there.
Very sorry.
That's all right.
Of course, immediately after sitting back down and trying to open the box, Greg gets frustrated and smashes it on the floor. In task two, a contestant gets visibly and seriously angry, which is always a treat. The contestants are challenged to find what happens when they flick a switch in the Taskmaster lab. They had to check every room in the house where numerous appliances were both off and on. There's running, there's frustration, and of course, the moment of discovery when they find out that Alex turns around the night statue, Ollie, in the garden every time they come out and go back into the house. Carrie, Phil, and Jessica hated this task. Rod, falling into a classic Taskmaster trope, thought he'd beaten the task when he turned off a different connected switch next to the main switch, thereby doing actually nothing and assuming he'd just completed the task. He got 1 point for that, which he absolutely should not have. James got the best time by flat out running everywhere, and Carrie did not like the insinuation that she didn't put in as much effort. Clip five.
I'll tell you what it was, Carrie. It was urgency. The man appreciated he was against the clock, and he moved with speed.
I was licking it around that.
Well, it's not the top.
Here's how urgent I was, Kerry.
I was not wandering.
I was running.
It wasn't.
We were all running.
No, Kerry, you were...
Watch it back. I was running.
Oh, God, please.
You may have done one run. You were largely sauntering.
Kerry is a true competitor, which you can tell because she takes Taskmaster seriously enough to get angry at it. She pretty quickly realizes that she's getting frustrated over a game show for which the prize is a golden statue of a head that bears not even a passing resemblance to Greg, and finds the humility to laugh at herself. For task three, the comedians all walk into a random office building with an elevator and a briefcase on a table. They have to dramatically alter their appearance while in the elevator, which takes 18 seconds to reach the ground floor, using only the things in the briefcase. Unlike task two, in which the solution was a concrete thing, this task has no actual solution. Dramatically transforming themselves in 18 seconds with just 5 minutes to prep with things like jam and wigs is hard no matter what your skills are. So it's down to whoever does the weirdest and wildest thing. And in this one, pretty much everyone does something weird and wild. J- Jessica comes out with a tie made of felt and a wig on her face, presumably to mimic a beard, which she manages to keep on for barely 5 seconds. Carrie assumed that her slow counting would affect how quickly the elevator descended and only had time to put on a mullet wig and shove another wig up her shirt for some reason. The main attractions here are Phil, Rod, and James. Now, this is a great time to bring up what Phil decided to wear for all the tasks. Bruce Lee's yellow and black jumpsuit from Game of Death. The issue is that it's a bit too small around his crotch, so it turns his dick and balls into a very defined and obviously packaged bump that is impossible to ignore. He comes out of the elevator carrying a jar of jam and wearing sunglasses and a sign that says, "Not Phil Wang." Obviously, Greg asks how he thinks a jar of jam changes his appearance, and then Rod brings up a great point. Clip six.
The bigger problem for me, I thought, was that it was... There's one thing about you across this whole series that is unmistakably you, Wang.
Yeah,
of course.
Never any
doubt. You would have just held out the jam there. That's completely transforming your idea.
Yeah.
Rod, who might be the most bizarre contestant in Taskmaster history, gets out of the elevator having taken off his shoes, stripped down to his boxers, and put on a gray wig. He then smears mustard all over his face, puts on a pair of neon green sunglasses, and proceeds to walk directly into the women's room. If you're wondering why mustard, you are not alone. Clip seven.
There was absolutely no need to rub mustard into your face.
Also, that was a wig. He chose a wig which looked exactly like his hair, but it was a wig.
I didn't even know you were wearing a wig.
James tries to cheat by pressing the emergency stop button, which does nothing but make lots of noise. He spends most of the ride trying to unbutton his coat with one hand and then yelling as he realizes how this is going to end. Clip eight.
Oh, no. 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 No.
Please step out of the lift.
Oh, I'm lost. I'm lost in this one.
Thanks.
James gets 1 point, obviously, and Rod wins for his mustard exploits. Task four. Make this scale read 31.770 kg. Fastest wins. Jessica, whose trademark move all season has been blind panic, doesn't disappoint. She doesn't think she's allowed to leave the lab, so she asks everyone for their shoes, which is the perfect idea for a windowless room surrounded by plastic sheeting. Eventually, Alex clues her in. Clip nine.
I don't understand what to do.
Why have you only used shoes? Does it say you have to stay in this room?
Oh, you made out like I did.
I said all the information's on the task.
Rod collects all of his items and puts them all on the scale. And then after blowing up some balloons and putting those on, doesn't push him overweight, he decided to start spitting into a container on the scale. He did make weight, but not as efficiently as he could have. Clip 10.
Your balloons and spit, eh?
The problem was you slightly misread the scales. You thought you needed 0.065 more grams, but you needed 65 grams worth
what?
Of spit.
When you started spitting, you actually needed 65 grams. Mm.
That's a tennis ball. It's a tennis ball worth of spit.
I did it.
Eventually.
James is so close to figuring out what those numbers mean during the task, but he can't quite get there. In the studio, he figures it out. The numbers say Ollie upside down, and it matches the weight of Ollie the statue. And now we have the live task. They're all challenged to correctly don the most pieces of clothing with their hands tied behind their backs. There are sunglasses, a fez, a scarf, a poncho, and rubber gloves. This one gets physical, which happens a few times this season, and for good reason. Rod has no shame. James is easily angered. Phil is so slow. Carrie is ultra-competitive. And Jessica is clumsy and often panics. It's so entertaining. And this time, Rod and Phil end up tumbling around, hands bound behind their backs, trying to remove each other's clothes. James, at the opposite end of the stage from Rod and Phil, wins because he is at the opposite end of the stage from Rod and Phil. That was the final task, but we don't have a winner yet. James and Rod each have 17 points, so we get a rare and magical tie break. They're challenged to make a paper airplane out of toilet paper. Furthest flight wins. James makes a toilet paper bird, essentially, which flies about as far as you think it would, while Rod pulls off a few squares and then chases them around the yard with a leaf blower. Rod wins for following the spirit of the task, I guess, because two sheets of toilet paper is not a paper airplane. But along with his completely undeserved 1 point on the switch task, I feel this is a true miscarriage of justice, which is just as silly and pointless as Carrie getting angry because Greg thought she sauntered. This episode has everything. Hilarity, haplessness, panic, anger, aggressive bizarreness, bizarre aggression, undeserved and unexplained self-confidence, cheating attempts, bitchiness, frustrating scoring decisions, physical interactions of several types, and tons of creativity. I go back to Taskmaster a lot. It's earned a place in my comfort TV pantheon alongside Frasier, Happy Endings, The Golden Girls, and Clone High. I watch Series 7 more than any other series, and this episode is funny every single time I watch it. It's a true joy, and I hope you agree and vote it into the canon.
Thank you, Liz. Sarah, why don't you go first, and Dave and I will follow you.
I don't have the Taskmaster context of the rest of the panel, but this was a delight, obviously. There's also like really good callbacks in this one, like to the snarl of cords behind Carrie's TV. there's like just enough cursing. This is the wonderful thing, of course, about UK TV is that like things like I can't be fucked to plug it in and yeah, I'm going to lose to fucking mustard face. Like, yes, thank you. More of that. And also when she was called old furry docs, because she just stuffed the wig up her shirt. I mean, they're just so quick. And as sort of an episode goes on, there's these callbacks to things that happen, but also I think there's like season long callbacks, and the interweaving of that is one of the things that's really great about this show. This was also a good blend of all the ways that things can go wrong on these tasks, but also all the ways that people's minds work wonderfully, that Wang sort of is like, oh, I'm going to find something to fill with water and I'll just keep and get a dipper and I'll do it that way. And then Rod is like, I mean, the way that different people's minds work on these things, and then Jess being like, but you made it out like I did. And then she just keeps saying how stinky the shoes are. I mean, Liz is right. There really is something for everyone. And then them just like rolling around handcuffed, trying to kick a fez off each other's heads is like, you know. Should quote unquote we be amused by this? It's like, it's so simple, but it's effective for that reason. Like, this show is both very dumb and very smart about the ways in which it is dumb and lets people be dumb. And nothing is funnier to me than people getting a wild hair about the scoring on this, because mm-hmm. it's like me and Tara and Game Time that were like, you know what? It's Game Time. Who cares? But it's like, you know, sometimes you would hear the theme song playing for you. So as always, like, there's no such thing as a bad Taskmaster canon presentation, certainly. But because I am not the Taskmaster expert that the rest of the panel is, I will let someone else talk for a while. David Cole.
I don't think there's like a bad episode of Taskmaster. Like, there's always something that will delight you in Taskmaster. I feel like once in a while, the task creation team figures out they can do something new and goes overboard with a season of it. Like, I remember there's a season where they were like doing a lot of camera multiplicity tasks mm-hmm. where it's like film yourself 12 yeah. times and make a movie where you talk to yourself. And it was like six of those in one season. I was like, come on, guys, like, you know, save something for the next season. But generally speaking, the tasks are usually pretty good. I will say I thought the actual 2, 3, 4 tasks were kind of lackluster, like on their start with a light switch. And it was just like, here's the switch, figure out what it is. You know, when we had the contestant who just like basically bolts out of the door to figure out what's going on and catches Alex Horn in the middle of manually turning Ollie the little knight statue. That's great, but it didn't really translate for the other contestants. Like, there was one good moment for that, but the rest of it was just sort of like, I'm just going to go through the house and check in, check in, check in. The elevator one, I feel like they thought the elevator task was going to go differently. I mean, I felt like Taskmaster Incorporated.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't think they got the results they were hoping for. I think they actually, I'm with the person that was like, that wasn't 20 seconds. Like, I feel like they mistimed that or overstated it or something, because if you have a task where you can only get like two things on, it's, you know, it's time to like move the elevator to like dress yourself between subway stops or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe that wasn't, they didn't cue test. They didn't QT that one.
Maybe. Something seemed a little off with that one to me. It seemed like, the QA didn't give them the results they needed for the live shooting. And I didn't really think, like, the outcome was that funny for that one. The scale one, again, I thought was, like, it was okay. Like, I get it. Like, you know, somebody really remembers boobies on the calculator and created a task out of that. But again, like, the shoe thing was really stupid and funny, and the fact that she just, the amount of time people don't reread the task and Taskmaster in the later seasons is maddening. Like, there's so many like epic fails to do just misreading and then not rereading, just asking a question that is obviously going to be on the task itself. And the whole thing where, you know, she just like, you know, like, everybody give me
how
your
shoes.
How
much does water weigh? Oh, honey.
Yeah. So that one was sort of like in the middle. Like, I felt that the task itself was but they actually got some pretty good performances out of it. I don't like, this is just me, I feel like it's good TV, but I don't like when contestants knock stuff over and interfere in the live tasks when somebody else is trying to like dress themselves, which, by the way, they've done before. There was a holiday dress up one where they have a suitcase and they have to pull out all the items the suitcase says.
Yeah, that's from the other episode that's in the canon.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So it was a very similar task. Yeah. So that one was kind of fun too, but I don't like it when they like start kicking each other and stuff like that. I feel like that, much like Liz gets upset about scoring, which, by the way, I totally agree with Rod. So got zero, should have been disqualified for that one.
Yes.
100% agree. I feel like that person should have been disqualified. Anybody who kicks somebody else's stuff off should be disqualified. Because then you could just like do that right from the start, knock their table over or something like that. Right. And they can't participate. There needs to be law and order here. Mm-hmm. Finally, I will say, in a sort of Richard Osman-esque interpretation of the paper plane tie challenge, if you think of a paper plane as a plane as in a plane of, you know, a dimensional plane, a piece of toilet paper fits the bill. So I feel like he could have argued that point.
Yeah.
However, because they edit the show obviously after the fact and mix things chronologically to create an episode they feel has a compelling theme, they do that with the tasks. So they choose the outcome of who wins that episode. Mind you, it has no real bearing on who wins the season, just who wins, you know, theoretically wins the prizes for that episode. Mm-hmm. But for that reason, I feel like the task or the tiebreaker task should also be live.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they are editing in who wins. And that doesn't.
Yeah, no, you are not a crackpot. I agree.
Yeah.
There are broadly like certain types of contestant, and there's across all seasons, and we get a lot of good types in this mix of a cast in series 7. We have the young sort of spacey person, that's James. We get the complete dimple, that's Jessica. And I say that with love. We get the super competitive person, Carrie, who is also doubles as Greg's not very secret favorite, which is becomes clear over the course of the season. And this is also the one where we get, there's something about office supplies, I think, later in the season. And they both are get into a sidebar about like what the king of office supplies is. And they're like, what is it? 3, 2, 1,
Laminator.
They both agree. Yes. It's so great. And then the person who's competitive some of the time, but not really that committed, which is Phil. And then Greg's old friend, in this case, is Rod. Okay, so these are all fine examples of these competitor types. I will say I read at some point that Phil did not have a great time doing the show. And that has, I'm sorry to say, I'm sorry if I demystified this for other people like has happened for me. But I feel like now that after knowing that, watching Series 7 the second time, I felt like I could kind of tell, or I just convinced myself I could. Like in the moment when Greg smashes the box that he's brought, they cut to his face. And it does seem like he is maybe kind of actually upset a little bit. Like, it's partly for the performance, but maybe not totally. I agree with Dave. You should not be able to interfere with each other in a live task. And I agree with Liz that the scoring here is some bullshit.
But also Liz is right that being upset about Taskmaster yes. scoring is part of the alchemy of this show. Mm-hmm.
Completely. Yeah. I'll also just mention, it's way more bullshitty on New Zealand. He's giving out fives.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's no tomorrow on stuff that is, like, shit. And there's just no logic to what he's doing. And he should be disqualifying people way more than he ever does. That said, I mean, Dave's making some good points. Like, he's right about the live task. It is spiritually the same as the one from season 2, episode 1, which I also had in my notes. And I do also agree that the elevator one, it just feels like not enough. But on the other hand, we also get, in this episode, some of the runners of season 7 that I mean, Liz already mentioned the semi-nude photo of Greg with his old teeth. The runner of Phil haggling over stuff that he brings in for the prize task. And I feel like this isn't the only time that we see Greg having a quiet word with James or someone else, or it's possible that he just does that in multiple seasons and I forget. But if that's the first time, it's not the last, certainly. Like, that's a hallmark of the show. So, you know, I was more with it, but I think Dave has kind of talked me into, like, this
oh,
is...
Oh, no, I'm the villain.
It's a good episode, but the problem with Taskmaster is it's such a good show that, like, something has to happen that elevates it for it to get in the canon, just because it is so consistently really good. And I appreciate the argument you made, and you made some points, but Dave made some points too. So yes, Dave is the villain.
All right, let me just end the discussion on a high note, which is something I just forgot to mention, which is my favorite sort of, like, visual moment was the prize task, bring a confusing item, the t-shirt from Spain with the raven.
Oh, Jessica's
with the,
t-shirt.
Yeah, with a nonsensical thing. Like, I would buy that if I'm sure somebody's made it, put it on Redbubble. If I could find a real one of those, I would totally buy it. I was like, that is the five-pointer for me. So anyways, all right, we'll put this to the vote. Sarah, please vote yes on this. Sarah, what did you think?
I am going to vote yes just because of the aside for... The Mr. Bond, when someone walks off the elevator, like, just exactly the same, except with a wig on. So, yeah, I mean, I laughed very hard and wanted to watch more, so I'm voting yes.
Not a bad episode, but I'm going to say that not quite up to canon standards, but definitely worth your time. Tara, what say you?
I agree with you. Sorry. Sorry, right. Liz, please come back.
Yeah, no. So.
It's okay.
That means that, unfortunately, Taskmaster Series 7 Episode 4, Ollie, you are hereby not injected into the extra hot great kid.
Oh, you lost a mustard face.
I know.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
Former zine. Then board game, then nationwide franchise Weird New Jersey is getting a horror comedy series adaptation at Sony Pictures Television. I'm a little bit sad that the production team is not the guys behind the New Jersey is the World podcast, some of whom you saw in the Action Park documentary. But I'm still going to watch it, let's face it, because the Garden State has more abandoned mental hospitals than any other state per hectare, and you can't go wrong there.
And loser of the week?
Well, first of all, I just want to add, I found the t-shirt, and we will link it in the show notes. It's on Threadless. It's not on Redbubble.
Threadless actually does still screening, so that's good.
So there you go.
There you go. All right.
But my loser of the week is Wanda Sykes, who is going to be hosting a show for, I believe, Prime Video, built around footage taken from Ring doorbell cameras. Let us all normalize our current surveillance state. I guess I can't fault Amazon for doing this because they are one of the most evil companies there is, and that is their product. But Wanda Sykes, what the fuck are you doing?
They can't possibly be paying her enough
to make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that it's 90% of Ring footage that actually is worthy of somebody actually reviewing it is people stealing your package from Amazon off your porch.
Yes.
So like, what do they have? Like me going back and forth three times after I exit the door to go back to get my keys. Oh shit, my wallet. Oh shit, my phone, because I can never remember everything in one go.
Oh, what shit, is this show? Yeah.
It's a guy with his face covered in mustard.
Speaking about faces covered in mustard, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Game Time. This is the seventh Game Time of the current season. To remind you, our scores are Tara in first with 3 wins, Sarah right behind with 2, Value Guess on the board with 1. Today, we are playing Watch TV Every Day from Doug Dale, who earns themselves an extra credit topic of their choosing. Also, a thanks to @EHGAssist for some help on fleshing out the questions here. In today's Game Time, you will be tasked with naming TV shows based on info about their Season 4, Episode 20 offering. This is not about drugs. First, I will give you just the title. And if you can guess it with that, and it's very, very possible with some of these questions, you will get 2 points. If you don't know it, I will read you a summary of the episode with names redacted according to my whim. Mm-hmm. And the correct answer after that is worth 1 point. You can only guess once.
Okay.
Steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah D. Bunting has 11 steel meals. I have 8 steel meals. Valued Guest has 4 plus Eric's meal for a total of 5. Liz, you listen. You know how this works. If you want to steal, jump in real fast before Dave gives the correct answer.
That is how you do it. All right, let's throw it to Picky to see who will be your first player.
We will start with Valued Guest.
All right, Liz is in the hot seat. Then Sarah, then Tara. Are we ready to play Watch TV Every Day?
Yes. Yes.
All right, here we go, but not before I give you one more piece of information.
Oh.
The questions have been sorted alphabetically by answer.
Okay.
So if you know the answer to the last one, you can take an educated guess at the next one. So I'll give you a little bit of more grounding for your next answer. So here we go for Liz. The title of the Season 4, Episode 20 of the show is Day 4, 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. What is that show? Guess now or ask for a hint.
24.
24 is good for 2 points. Sarah, the title of your episode, Season 4, Episode 20, is The Moms. The Moms.
The Moms. Hint?
The Girly Show hosts a special episode for Mother's Day.
Broad City?
That is 30 Rock. 30 Rock, the Gorilla Show, is the show within 30 Rock.
Oh, right.
Tara?
Yep.
Showtime at Hillman.
A Different World.
A Different World is correct. Another 2-pointer. Back to Liz. Your episode, Season 4, Episode 20, is The Descent.
Yeah, I'm going to need a hint here.
Elena raids the DSR facility housing the Rambaldi device.
Alias.
Alias, good for 1. Back to Sarah Bunting. Cloudy Skies, Chance of Parade.
Cloudy Skies, Chance of Parade.
Yeah. I'm just going to let you know, I think about 1/3 of these, the titles are gimmies. This is definitely not one of them. Just letting you know, like the titles are like, duh.
Yeah. Because the last one was an A show, and because I'm behind and you got to guess it sometime, and I am who I am, I'm going to guess Benson.
All right, here's the question's burned, but here's the summary, see if it jogs your memory. Sting, guest starring as himself, hires Larry to represent him against a concert goer played by Paul Rubens. Any idea there? Follows alias alphabetically.
Yeah.
No.
No.
What if I told you Larry is played by Robert Downey Jr.?
Oh, that's Ally McBeal.
That's Ally McBeal.
Wow.
There.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not thought about that show in a long time.
Mm-mm. Why would you?
All right, Tara.
Yep.
Your season 4, episode 20 title is Top 12 Perform.
American Idol.
Yes, American Idol. There's a gimme. 2 points. Liz, your title is Half Court Trap. Half Court Trap.
Half Court Trap. That sounds vaguely sportsy.
There's also the hint.
Is that... am I going to regret this? Or maybe the hint won't help me. I'll just guess Arliss. No.
Incorrect.
Interesting.
Title character is shocked to discover his nephew, a school basketball star, can barely read or write.
I probably still would have guessed Arliss, a show I've never seen.
You want to take a crack at this one, sir?
Benson?
Oh.
Benson no. was the answer there, yes. Oh. All right, Sarah, here's your actual question. Title of the episode is Scared Very Straight.
Scared Very Straight. I feel like I know this, but I'm going to need the hint.
Major character and Jesse's impromptu engagement leads to familiar tension, and major character no one likes, dealer, gets busted.
Yep.
Oh, Jesus. The magical toilet episode, of course. Why did you say so? Beverly Hills 90210.
Good for one.
I believe you wrote that one up for the book.
I did.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Gene It On.
Bob's Burgers.
Bob's Burgers, correct. I just noticed these two are out of order, but let's just deal with it. Liz. Live Eviction 6. Live Eviction 6.
I'm going to need this.
Remember, he just said they're out of order.
Yeah.
So this is alphabetically before Big Brother.
Yeah, this is between Beverly Hills and Bob's Burgers.
Yes.
All right. You want the hint still?
Yeah, I'm still going to need this.
Justin is evicted in a 3-1 vote and a new HOH competition begins.
See, my thought went to something like Cops, where they were evicting people on live television,
mine
and I hadn't
too.
Heard of a show like that. This is Big Brother.
Big Brother, yes, correct.
Which I accidentally said instead of Bob's Burgers. But apparently you didn't hear me, so great news.
Sir, Mayhem on a Cross. Mayhem on a Cross.
Hint.
The team investigates after a Norwegian black metal band uses an American skeletal remains as a prop on stage.
Bones?
Bones, correct. Tara.
Bones. Yes.
The Yoko Factor is your 420 episode title. The Yoko Factor.
Hint.
Adam Alliss, major character to turn the Scoobies against one another.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, good for one. Liz. Your title is Con Games. C-O-N, Con Games.
That's hint. Hint me.
Major character swindles the swindlers in the case with the Bunko unit. Meanwhile, Chris's sexual harassment charges against Captain Hennessy go to trial. Our last answer was Buffy. It's an older show. I'll give you that much.
No. I don't know. No.
That is Cagney and Lacey. Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, wow.
No.
Okay.
Oh, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. I love that show.
Sarah, your season 4, episode 20 title is The Limey.
Kent.
Detective Beckett and title character meet an inspector from Scotland Yard looking for help in solving the murder of a family friend.
It's very tempting to say Caw and Order because that would in fact be in alphabetical order, but I don't think that's it. Columbo? Done.
Incorrect. That is Castle.
Castle. Oh.
All right. This is for Tara. We'll take us into our first score break.
Yep.
Save the Last Dance for Me is season 4, episode 20 of what show?
Hint.
Shifting partners cause confusion at the Tidal Locations dance contest.
Copacabana.
That is incorrect.
Should have been a show, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The answer we're looking for is Cheers.
Cheers.
Dance competition at Cheers. All right. That is 15 questions done. Let's get the scores.
It's pretty close. Sarah DeBunting has 3. Liz has 4. I have 7.
All right. We are back to Liz. Your season 4, episode 20 title is Dead Ringer. Our last answer was Cheers. Now, Dead Ringer. What show or a hint is available?
I will take the hint.
The team investigates the death of 3 police officers in a time when over 20,000 policemen gather in Vegas for a marathon.
Vegas, you say?
Vegas, you do say.
I like to call it Lost Wages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do.
Been a while.
Cheers, police unit. Mm.
You're so close.
No steel meal, Sarah?
I mean, for a point.
Okay. That is Crime Scene Investigation, CSI. All right, this is question 17 for Sarah.
The Spread Eagle.
Your title is The Redcoats Are Coming.
Churn Washington Spies, just kidding. Hint.
When Rob offers up his home as a refuge for rock and roll idols, The Redcoats, his family's apartment gets mobbed by a throng of hysterical teenagers.
Rob, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Hysterical teenagers?
Yes.
Oh. The Carrie Tyler Moore Show? I can't pull it. Sorry. I don't know.
You're so close.
The other one.
I know.
The Dick Van Dyke Show. Dick Van Dyke Show. Tara.
Yeah.
Your title... This show's season 4, episode 20, is A Past Regret and Future Fear.
Dynasty?
Incorrect. Doctors treat a baby addicted to methadone, a patient with cerebral palsy, and a man dying from chemical burns on ER. This is question. We're back to Liz with the title, Therefore She Is.
Hint.
Our hero teams up with Gypsy to thwart the Thinker's plan as Cisco and Gypsy discuss their relationship.
All those names sound familiar. Last one was
ER.
ER. I can't even think of a funny quip. I don't know who those people are, even though they sound familiar.
Whoops, it wasn't double wrong. That was just a mispress.
No, it deserved that.
Oh, no, no. This is The Flash. The Flash. Mm. All right, Sarah. Mm. 3 dates and a breakup.
Girls.
Oh, just went for it. Major character and Sherry break up, interfering with the protagonist's dating plans.
That Frazier.
Frazier.
Oh,
you ought to know. You're Frazier. Okay, so... Tara, get ready for this one.
Okay.
The one with all the wedding dresses.
Oh, come on. That's Friends.
Picky.
Yeah. All right, get ready for this one, Liz. Fuller House.
Is it the show Fuller House?
No, it's not.
Oh, no.
No, is it the show Full House?
Full House, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, dear.
Listen, all right. With a clue like that, I think it's reasonable for me to get mixed up.
I just didn't really consider it that they would name the show, but yeah, it could happen. Probably does. Sarah, here's one that's not quite as easy, but I still feel like it's in the semi-gimme category. Luke can see her face. Full House was our last answer.
Right.
Luke can see her face.
They had episode titles? What the fuck? That shit was on for like 80 years. General Hospital?
No.
Oh! Why? Steel Meal.
Steel Meal.
It's Gilmore Girls.
Gilmore Girls, yes.
Oh, that bitch.
Yes.
Stolen for two. All right, Tara.
Well stolen, yes.
High Anxiety is your season 4, episode 20, episode of what show?
Oh, God, hint.
Major character goes through pill withdrawal while two of the girls are hired to be in a pizza commercial.
Two of the girls? Pills?
Yeah.
I was thinking house after pills, but not if there's two of the
hospital,
girls.
Comma, general?
Yeah. Gravy boat.
Soon we'll be making another one.
That is Girls Golden The. Back to Liz. Mosbius Designs. Mosbius Designs.
How I Met Your Mother.
You are correct for two. Sarah, Meet the Propaniacs. Meet the Propaniacs. Last answer was How I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm. And you're trying to get me to say Inspector Gadget, but
I'm not.
Won't do it.
No. Hint. I keep on saying Propaniacs. All right. Hint?
Yes.
Major character forms a comedy group called the Propaniacs.
Yeah.
Inspector Gadget.
Wait, hang on. What is it about Inspector Gadget that you tie in with propane?
That's what powers him?
No. It fuels a gadget? I don't know.
He's got a big tank on his back.
Also, my mind emptied of letters. I don't know what happened.
All right. Somebody else know the answer here?
Yeah, it's King of the Hill.
King of the Hill, yes. Propane and propane accessories. All right. Well, here's one for you, Tara.
Yep.
Night of the Rising Sun.
Hint.
Major character and RC are meeting with Nick O'Brien, an old friend of Devon, with whom he served in Korea.
Yeah.
They end up protecting Nick's adopted son, Koi, from ninja leader Tanika, who is convinced the boy is the rightful heir to his clan. Whew.
Well, it's something Sarah knows. So I'm trying to think what is after K. Is this Law and Order?
Wait.
I don't know. I don't know. The other thing I was thinking was Samurai Jack, but that seems
well,
like
Samurai
it's
Jack's
way too
closer. Late. All right, Steel Meal from Sarah. Meal?
Yeah.
Is it Knight Rider?
Yes, Knight Rider.
Of course
Rider
is it is. Of
fucking God.
It
is. Law and Order.
I hate this game so much.
All right, Liz. Your episode title is A Most Precious Gift. A Most Precious Gift.
Hint.
Ma announces she's pregnant, but fears how Pa will react if the baby is a girl.
Ma and Pa, you say?
Little House on the Prairie?
Yes, Little House on the Prairie, correct for one. Sarah D. Bunting, back to you. Your episode title, season 4, episode 20, Some 38th Parallels. Some 38th Parallels.
38th Parallels. Hint, please.
Frank decides to make money by auctioning off the camp garbage, and major character's love life suffers a serious attack.
MASH?
MASH, 38th Parallel.
Nice.
MASH, yes. Take us into a second score break for Tara.
Yeah.
Dream a Little Dream.
Hint.
A champion surfer claims that her ex-husband is threatening her and wants to kidnap their daughter, so title character tries to protect her.
Magnum P.I.?
Magnum P.I. putting together the alphabet and surfer for the answer. Yes, that is good for one, and it's time for our second score break.
Well, it's closer than the last time. Sarah D. Money has 5 points. Liz has 9. I have 10.
All right, it's still anybody's game. Everybody has 4 questions left, so everybody still has 8 points possible. We're back to Liz. Your season 4, episode 20 title is Peggy Made a Little Lamb. Peggy Made a Little Lamb.
Is this another case where they're out of order? Just checking.
No.
Okay.
I still want to guess Mad Men because I have no other
That's
answer.
What I thought too. That's why I checked.
I'm still just going to guess
it's
that.
It's not. It's not out of order. So ask for the hint instead
of
just throwing
the hint.
It.
Okay, fine. I will ask for the hint then.
Peggy must make up a half credit in home economics to receive her high school diploma, so she goes to night school with Kelly. Peggy is soon asked to make a rack of lambs for her finals.
Married with Children?
Married with Children. Good for 1 point.
Oh, Peggy. Never heard her called that before.
Sarah. Romeo and Juliet. Romeo and Juliet is your title.
Romeo and Juliet. Hint.
Gina and Pam have taken notes in an upcoming play to help raise money for needy kids. But when the play's lead injures himself, title character improvises with his own homeboy interpretation of Romeo and Juliet.
Martin?
Martin is good for one. Tara?
Yep.
Your season 4, episode 20 title is Alan Arkin.
Hint.
Alan accidentally drinks a Jekyll and Hyde potion and turns into a rampaging monster.
2½ Men?
Incorrect. Anybody? That is The Muppet Show.
Oh.
The Muppet
Show.
Oh.
Sorry, sure. I didn't gross words.
Liz, sense. Your title, Showdown in Saskatchewan. Making a second appearance on our episode, Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan. I will take the hint, please.
After Jill Morton runs away to Canada to be with a rodeo cowboy, her mother requests that main character follow her. Murder ensues.
Oh, that's not what I was thinking.
No. I got nothing.
Last answer was The Muppet Show.
Yes.
Oof. No. Anybody?
I got nothing.
Wherever she goes, murder ensues. That's Jessica Fletcher from Murder, She Wrote.
I thought it might be that. I'm like, how could it be that? Like an idiot. All right.
Special holiday episode up in Canada. Wow. Up in balmy climes of Saskatchewan. Sarah D. Bunting. Sarah D. Bunting. The Debate.
The Debate. Yeah, oh, so nice. Tempting to say The Nest Wing, but I won't. Hint.
The civil servants must navigate a rigged debate against rival Bobby Newport. Last answer, Murder, She Wrote.
Can I hear the hint again?
The civil servants must navigate a rigged debate against rival Bobby Newport.
Rigged debate against rival Bobby Newport? Ned of the class? I don't know. I'm sorry.
Anybody know that one?
Liz, we are tied, so if you know it, you should steel mill it.
All right, I will.
All right, steel mill.
Steel mill. Parks and Recreation.
Parks and Recreation is correct. Do not be shy about using those steel mills. There are a lot there, and something might happen to them at the end of the season. So I suggest you use them.
That's I guess right. That is true. I was trying to be respectful of future valued guests.
No, that's
true. Them.
I don't care about
they're
them.
They're on their
anymore.
Own.
Yeah.
You still have 3.
Tara.
Yep.
Fabulous.
Your 420 title is Therapy.
And the last one was Parks and Recreation. I'll still take the hint.
Title character accompanies Jackie to the therapist to work out their sister issues.
Roseanne.
Good for one. Back to Liz. Snow White and the Seven Dorks. Last answer, Roseanne.
I'll take a swing. Is this Saved by the Bell?
Yes, it is Saved by the Bell.
Wow, nice.
Major female character and major female character compete for the lead in the school play, a rap version of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, it's terrible.
So first of all, we need to watch that Knight Rider episode at some point. And we also need to watch the rap version of Snow White episode of Saved by the Bell. All right, back to...
You will regret it.
Back to Sarah. Good one here for you. The title of the 420 episode of this show is The Junior Mint.
Yeah.
The Junior Mint?
The Junior Mint.
So refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's a little mint. It's a junior
Shh,
mint.
Quiet you.
This is so sad.
Saved by the Bell
like,
was
oh,
your
it's
last
the
answer.
Sopranos. It's Seinfeld?
Yeah, Seinfeld. Good. Phew. All right, Tara, here's another tough one for you.
Yeah.
On the heels of Seinfeld.
Great.
Whacking Day.
Oh, The Simpsons.
Simpsons, yes. Another two. Liz, Vicky with an I, Doolittle. Vicky Doolittle.
Hint.
Ted installs a new program into Vicky that lets her understand any foreign language as well as animals.
Jeez. Small wonder.
That is correct.
Yikes.
Sarity Bunting. Best day ever.
Best day ever. Hint.
Title character's goal for the best day ever in Bikini Bottom doesn't go according to plan.
Oh, SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yes, good for one. And our last question of regulation for Tara.
Oh my God.
Commencement.
Is this Veronica Mars?
Yet. It is not. A late night party turns tragic when a Secret Service agent is found dead and the president's daughter is missing. That is the West Wing. Let's get end of regulation scores, please.
Well, Sarah finished with 9. I finish with 13. Ooh. Liz, our guest, 14!
All right, that's why you use the steel wheel, people.
That's why you use the steel wheel.
Totally makes up for my canon presentation not making it in.
Yes.
All right, I got 2 tiebreakers ready. Winner will get a steel wheel for future use. Shout out the answer when you think you know it. I will just give you data as I see fit. Our first title is The Impossible Dream. Pretty generic, so we'll just get right into the summary here. Les's mother is visiting and complains that he is in a dead-end job.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes, that is correct.
Oh.
He's going to follow his dream and apply for a job at CBS for the evening news in New York. Tara got that one.
Done.
All right, here's our last one. Still going alphabetically, mind you. Title is Small Potatoes.
X-Files
is correct. Major characters investigate a small town where babies are born with tails.
Valued guest.
Tails. Can we end the whole that way now? Tails.
Oh, Jesus.
Way to go, Liz. Nicely done.
Yes.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We all pitched in for a discussion of the series adaptation of A League of Their Own before going around the dial with stops at Never Have I Ever, Drag Race France et al., Better Call Saul, and This Fool. Liz didn't complete the task of getting Taskmaster's Ollie into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Liz was the winner of this week's Game Time from Doug et al. Next up, News Radio Power Rankings on Extra, Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime, it's Steve the Dragon. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
So I paid 300 baht.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Take that, you fizzy fuck.
And Liz Rocher.
Well, that's 300 baht I'm not getting back.
Thanks for listening. See you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Hey! Hey, you! Are you following us?
No. I was just looking at this wall, because it's sturdy. It's good. It's a good one.